Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Dowiak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Dowiak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and I've got some great topics today. First, we're going to talk about expectations for the Fed in next month's meeting. We're going to look at some ways that they're going to help fund Social Security benefits and make some changes to make the benefits better for the people receiving them. In the Plan Your Prosperity segment, we're going to talk about how great can be the enemy of good. And then finally, in the Ask Peggy segment, I'm going to answer or give you something to think about for the question I get all the time, which is, Peggy, how much should I save for retirement? But let's get started with the Bulls and Bears market and economic update. This is for the week ending August 15th, 2025. And last week was a good week in the market, with the Dow up about 1.75%, while the S&P 500 was up just a little under 1%, and the NASDAQ was up about 0.8%. Gold was up 2.25%, and oil dropped by 0.33%, and that current price is $63.14 for a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude at the front month price. The dollar index dropped about 0.33%, and the 10-year Treasury yield went up 3.2%, and that current 10-year yield is at 4.321%. The aggregate bond fund kind of got into the action too, up almost nothing at all at 0.01%. Bitcoin dropped 1.12%. And the volatility index, that index that measures how worried people are, dropped by 0.4%. So we're in rate cut watch, and I know today is only August 18th. I'm taping on a Monday, and I know that the Fed meeting isn't until next month, but there are some interesting things shaping up. We'll have to wait and see how it all goes. So unemployment was up, which made everybody absolutely sure that the Fed was going to cut rates in September. And then the inflation data came out this week, and the inflation data was much worse than people had anticipated. That's the PPI measurement. And so because inflation is hot, it may lead the Fed not to do anything. And I've been listening to all different kinds of people giving all kinds of potential responses. You know, this is kind of the worst case scenario for the Fed. Hopefully some of the data that comes in right before the meeting will come in a little bit better. But when unemployment is getting worse, you want to cut rates so it makes it easier so that businesses are more likely to hire. The reason, I mean, we tend to think about consumer rates being the reason the Fed cuts rates when unemployment is higher. That's not actually it. When you cut the rates, you positively impact business spending. So when businesses don't have as high of a rate of interest, they are much more likely to spend money. And one of the things they're more likely to spend money on are employee salaries. So when we think about, oh, unemployment is up, therefore, you know, the Fed's going to cut rates, they're doing that to encourage business to hire other people. Now, that's actually pretty easy to understand. I think that's pretty intuitive. Here's the part that's a little bit harder to understand. Remember that in controlling bad situations, the only thing the Fed can do is control money supply. And they control money supply a lot of different ways, but one is by raising or lowering rates. So when they raise rates, They tend to take money out of the system, where when they lower rates, they tend to put money into the system. And we're not going to go through the like perpetual motion machine of A leads to B leads to C. If you want to do a deeper dive on that, it's really interesting stuff. But suffice it to say for today's argument that when you have inflation, you've got a hotter economy. Now, this is the piece people don't really understand, because actually we get inflation for lots of reasons. But when things cost more, it's usually a sign that the economy is overheating, that it's actually doing quite well and we need to slow it down. The monster right now is the only real way to get a hold of inflation was what Jerome Powell had to do a couple of years ago when we also had inflation, but it wasn't because of a hot economy. It was because of the Russia invasion of Ukraine and a huge backlog of Chinese goods because the Chinese coronavirus outbreak did not go away as fast as it did in the West because we had better vaccines. So there was a lack of things to buy. And anytime you have a lack, right, you have inflation because for the goods that are there, people can charge more for them. And so you get an inflationary environment. Not really because the economy was so great. That's why what Jerome Powell and the Fed did was so amazing. They brought that inflation down and they didn't send us into a recession because we were just still kind of wobbly coming out of COVID. But the way they did it, they did it really carefully and they did it really measured. So we didn't wind up with that happening. So right now, there's a very strong probability. And I'm saying probability. Usually I would hedge my bets and say possibility, but I don't believe that's it. Probability that this is caused by the tariffs. Not a U.S. economy that's just doing great. Now, the market is rocking and rolling. The underlying economy's a little squishier due to a lot of uncertainty. Why is the market doing well when the economy isn't necessarily? I don't want to get very wonky, but it has a lot to do with the fact that a lot of the market is in the hands of a few really big companies. So that if you're looking at the index, you're going to see the movement of those companies more than you're going to see the movement of all the companies. I still believe in index funds, but it can be a problem when you have a handful of companies outperforming. The other thing that's happening is owners of companies, the management of companies, are buying back their own shares. And that's causing the price of the shares to go up when, in fact, it's all internal action. So the market's really very great right now. The economy is okay. It would be really very good if it wasn't for the tariffs and for all of the economic uncertainty. So right now, as inflation is going up, the only thing that the Fed can do to bring it down is raise rates, which is exactly backwards to what you want to do to help when employment numbers are also bad. So the Fed is going to have to measure what they think is the biggest threat, and they're going to take an action based off of that. They may also cave a little bit to all of the pressure about lowering rates a quarter point. And if it would lead to some long-term ability to sustain a reasonable economic path, I would not be opposed to that. Typically, the Fed worries more about inflation. In this particular measurement, they may be worried more about unemployment. But if you want to track economic data and see what's going to move the market, you want to look at unemployment numbers and you want to look at inflation, and when they're doing opposite things, it can get really tricky.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I know periodically, I promise you, I am not going to talk about bills that probably aren't going to get passed. And so I really shouldn't talk about this today, but I'm going to anyway, because this is a bill that is being brought by two members of the Hawaiian delegation, Senator Mazie Hirono and Representative Jill Takuda. So there's someone from the Senate, someone from the House, they both happen to be from Hawaii, who are looking at ways of saving Social Security. And they are proposing something that I have thought for a very long time ought to be one of the things that we're doing to make Social Security more stable. And that is to increase the amount of money that's subject to Social Security income. Now, for a lot of us, all of our income is subject to Social Security, because right now, the first $176,000 that you earn is subject to Social Security. And quite frankly, that is just nearly all of us, right? But for those people of means who are earning more than $176,000, their money is not subject to Social Security tax over $176,000. Now, this bill is proposing to implement the additional Social Security liability that's only going to be felt by people who are making more than $176,000 a year, because it comes off of your salary, and if you make $176,000 or less, then you pay all of your Social Security just like most of us do. So this is only impacting people who, they are not 1%, but I'm betting they're somewhere about the 5%ers, and making them pay into the Social Security system as well. And so they're proposing that you pay in a small amount, and then the next year you pay in more, and then after that you pay in more. So it's not like this is happening all at once. Instead, what would be happening is over time. And in what I was reading about this, it doesn't look like there's a payroll cap. Now, I would love that, because I think if you're fortunate enough to make that much money, then you should pay into Social Security. And it would instantly put a huge inflow of cash into the system and would do a lot to help with some of the potential shortfalls that are coming up. Do I worry that Social Security is going to go bankrupt? No, I don't believe they're going to let it happen. They being all those people in Washington, D.C., because they all want to get reelected. So whether they really care for it or not, there's going to be something that they're going to do that's going to work. Do I think that this bill is going to go anywhere? In truth, I don't. Because the people with the power are the people making more than $176,000 a year. Those people don't like this idea at all. This has been floated before. It's always failed before. I think it's just fair. I mean, it's not fair for the people who are making under to have all of their money taxed while the people making over get to cut it off. And then, you know, it's like 12%. That you have to pay in. So it's a very hefty pay increase for those people who aren't having to pay that extra money in. We're going to watch this. At least it's hopeful and kind of cheerful. And right now things seem to be just a little bit on the stressful side. So we're going to track this bill. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but I like it and I hope it works. The other thing that it would do is cause the cost of living increases on Social Security to be tied to CPI, which is the, CPI is the Consumer Price Index. And that's the index people understand. It's the most common index that gets quoted. The actual inflation calculation for Social Security is a little bit more complicated than that. This would be simplifying it. It would make it a little bit more transparent. I like the idea of making sure that people understand the only time they get increases in their Social Security check is when there's inflation. I heard people who were grousing here, I guess this was probably before COVID, about how they were mad that there hadn't been an increase in Social Security. That's because the only time you get an increase in your Social Security benefit, if you're receiving benefits, is if there has been an increase in inflation. We've been in a very, very low inflationary period for a considerable length of time. So people would get upset because they weren't getting raises. Well, they weren't getting raises because there wasn't inflation. The same bill, the bill that would also adjust how Social Security is calculated, is keeping that same principle. So you're not going to get an increase in your Social Security benefit. However, the way the CPI calculates inflation, it's a little bit more beneficial to people. It doesn't exclude as much. So that would really be a good thing. I think it would be very helpful to folks. We're just going to have to wait and see how it all goes, how it's handled. And again, like everything, I'll keep you in the loop. I'm hopeful. I'm just not very optimistic.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And sometimes I talk about topics that are very specific to the world of finance. And sometimes I talk about topics that have applications to the world of finance, but they're actually bigger principles than that. And that's what I thought I'd talk about today. And specifically, the name of today's talk is How Great Can Be the Enemy of Good. And that sounds kind of funny if you haven't heard it before. You know, being great should be better than being good. But the problem with thinking that you need to be great at something is it can get really unrealistic. So that if you're trying to accomplish something and you think you need to be great at it, and then you get started and you aren't, sometimes you give up in despair. Let's talk about dieting for a minute. In my first personal finance book, I have a chapter that's called Budgets and Diets Are Four-Letter Words. And I had someone look at that and say, no, it isn't. It was like, okay, it's a metaphor. And because we all know what four-letter words are, right? It's not this, that, and, you know, all of the other non-interesting four-letter words. I'm talking about the interesting four-letter words, the kind that you don't say in front of your parents or don't say in front of the kids. And the reason budgets and diets are both four-letter words is they get overwhelming really quickly. Let's talk about diets for a second. So when I think I'm going to go on a diet, I am completely unrealistic. I don't think it's a lifestyle change. I don't think this is something I should do forever. I am just awful at trying to crash off the weight. So I'll make some statement that says, okay, I am never going to eat fried foods again in any form or fashion. And then I get to the office or I go to the bank and they have a box of donuts. And donuts are my downfall. Donuts are also fried, right? So I have a donut. Now, what happens when I have that donut? I feel really guilty because I had said I was never going to eat anything fried again as long as I live. So I eat the donut and I feel bad about it. And then I get a call from a friend who wants to have lunch. That's great. And they want to go to a burger place. Well, I also love hamburgers. I don't know which I love more, burgers or hamburgers. But I mean, donuts or hamburgers, but I love them both. And so I go and I have a burger and they have a salad on the menu, but I don't order it. I order a burger and some fries. And so now for lunch, I've had nothing but fried food again. By the time I get ready to fix dinner, I've given up because nothing has worked the way it was supposed to, and I'm a failure, I can't diet, and so I just blow it off and eat whatever I want. Well, I see people do the same thing with money all the time. They get very unrealistic. Maybe you don't have an emergency fund. Maybe you make pretty good money, and you think you should be able to put back $300 a month. And so you start putting back $300 a month, but then something goes wrong and you can't do it. and you need to spend some of it. And so you take back a little, but you've still got $150 in the bank in savings, so that's good, right? And then something else goes south, and you spend that $150, and you feel like a failure. You feel like a failure because you weren't successful at the level you wanted to be successful at. When in fact, what you probably have done is set a slightly unrealistic expectation. Now, if you can save $300 and that's not a lot of money to you, that's fabulous. But I know some people listening to the show can't do that. And so I'm trying to use numbers that I don't think will overwhelm people just with the examples that I'm using. So maybe you think you need to save an emergency fund. And then, you know, those financial celebrities say it needs to be months and months of your income and you don't know how to do it. So what you do is you start with the amount you can be successful at. Because even if you put $25 a month back, that's going to be $300 a year. And if you don't have any money in savings, $300 is not a bad start. It also starts you down the road of saving rather than spending. You look for ways of saving money rather than feeling guilty and being overwhelmed and thinking that you need to save all this money and you can't do it, or you get overwhelmed by it, you just don't do it. So when you're trying to save for retirement, when you're trying to save an emergency fund, when you're doing anything where that goal is huge, right? You want to be sure that you stay realistic with it. You are going to go out to eat again. You are going to go shopping again. You will have times and things that you're going to spend money at. So you want to be sure that when you set up what it is that you want to do, that you set up numbers you can actually follow. So, since I've tried to make you feel better about that, I'm going to add something else that falls a little outside common financial celebrity wisdom. Because if you read the books or you watch the shows, a lot of them say, oh, when you get a raise, you should save it all. And you should put all that back into your retirement because you're used to living on what you were living before. And, you know, theoretically, that works great. And theoretically, yes, if you were living on your money before, you should be able to live on it now. But, you know, maybe you worked really hard to get that raise. And maybe it's been 2 or 3 years. And yes, you can live on what you were earning, but it's getting tricky. So rather than my telling you that I want you to save all of it, I want you to save half of it. I want you to put half of it back into your emergency fund or your retirement, or split it and fund both. And then you can put the other half in your checkbook and you can use it for anything you want, because I'm trying to give you some principles you can live by. If you get an end of year bonus, save half of it, and then you can do anything you want to with the other half. That way, it stops you from sabotaging yourself. That way you don't think, ooh, I should put it all back in savings. But, you know, you don't really want to put it all back in savings because you really would like to go and buy something with some of it. And so I'm not telling you you can't do that. I'm just asking you to limit that extra spending to half of it, not all of it. And that's going to make your long-term financial situation continue to improve. Because as you save a little, and your situation changes and hopefully gets better, you can save more and more. So that by using percentages rather than dollar amounts, maybe in 5 years, you're making quite a bit more and maybe you could save more, because you might really need to do that. But I don't want you to cheat and I don't want you to get discouraged. I want you to actually live by this. And if you save half, it's much easier to live on than if you think you need to save it all.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And before I get started with today's question, I want to say that anyone who's in the Oklahoma City area This coming up Saturday, which is August 23rd, is LitFest, which is held at the Downtown Library in Oklahoma City, the big one, the Ron Norick Library. And it's going to be really super fun. I'm going to be on a cozy mystery panel. And so we're going to be talking about different kinds of mysteries that you can write and what makes a cozy. So that'll be tons of fun. And there'll be lots of authors there with lots of books for sale. Then Labor Day week, I'm going to be in New Orleans at BoucherCon, which is a huge mystery conference. And I'll be signing books there, and I'm also chairing a panel on cozy mysteries at that convention, too. So if you're in the New Orleans area, or if you're coming to BoucherCon, then you should stop by and see us. And even if cozies aren't your thing, again, if you like any kind of a mystery, this is a great conference. Lots of stuff, both for writers and for readers. And so those are my two next big events. I want to answer a question today that I get asked all the time, and it's much more complicated than people think it is. And that question is, Peggy, how much should I be saving for retirement? And if you're a longtime listener of this show, you know my favorite answer is, it depends. And let me tell you the very first thing it depends on. It depends on how much you're spending today. And you need to figure that out, and then from there, you need to figure out how your future spending looks like today's spending. Because we can calculate inflation out to four decimal places to make sure we inflate that amount of money that you need today. But if we start with the wrong amount of money, you can just round off to a flat 3%, and you're going to be a million times closer than if you get that wrong. You need to know what you're spending, which makes it actually easier than trying to figure out what you earn. Because when you earn money, money gets put back in your retirement, money gets held out for this, that, and the other. When you reverse it and what you look at instead is how much you're spending, that's going to give you the very first best number. Now, you can decide whether or not you think you're going to spend more or less than that amount in retirement. I've seen people spend more. I've seen people spend the same amount, and I've seen very few people spend less. So it's possible you'll spend less, but there's an axiom of, oh, you'll spend 80% of what you spend today. And I will tell you, 22 years into doing this, and I don't see that in real life. I see people who spend just about the same amount in retirement that they're spending today. Then the other thing you have to know is your risk tolerance level, because how much your money grows is a function of how risky your portfolio is. So if you're moderately conservative, you can't assume your portfolio is going to grow at 11%. I don't want to talk about how you choose your risk tolerance. I'll let you use other data to get the actual percentages, but what I'm going to promise you is you need to absolutely make sure those things more or less line up, because I see that go wrong all the time. I think you should also consider maybe working a little bit longer if the numbers don't look like they're working. You need to make sure that you have a good sense of how much you're saving. You probably need to save more than 3% because you're, even though it's going to grow, it probably won't work. So take all those variables, talk to a financial planner, and you can make a plan.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.